Hello, crackheads. You're listening to Paranormal Cracktivity. My name's Justin.
And I may be Drake.
Welcome back, guys. How are we feeling?
As of right now, are you talking to me, as in guys?
You know, right after I said that, I was like, I wonder why I feel the need to why every time I feel the need to ask you how you're feeling, and like generally, like everyone, like how I want to know how people are feeling. I want to make sure you're feeling good.
I'm gonna start asking the question: how much money do you make?
We're not.
I'm just gonna like first time I meet somebody. Hi, my name is Drake. How much money do you make?
Oh my goodness. Okay. I'm so.
Not that it makes a difference.
Not that it makes a difference.
Just.
But it might.
A new question.
It might affect how you're feeling.
It might affect how they're feeling.
Affects how I'm feeling. So I'm excited to hear what we're getting into. What are we covering today?
We are covering a case that I heard about. But I forgot about.
Ooh.
And then I remembered, and I was like, oh, this is a creepy case. Ooh. So we are going to be covering the case of Daniel LaPlante.
Oh, okay. I'm pretty sure that I've...
Do you know this
one? I'm pretty sure that I've heard this. I'm not good at remembering things, so I don't remember anything about it. But I think I have heard it before. I'm excited to hear you tell it.
I was researching cases, and... I was like, oh my gosh, this story looks scary. And like the more I dug into it, I was like, oh, I feel like I've heard this before. So let's just jump right in and talk about Mr. Daniel LaPlante and his shenanigans. So Daniel LaPlante was born on May 15th or 16th in 1970 in Massachusetts. When I was researching this case, there were a lot of conflicting facts. And so basically everything I'm going to tell you I'm going to tell you the things that I feel like were consistent throughout all of the sources and that mm-hmm. made the most sense. So he was either born on the 15th or 16th of May in 1970 in Massachusetts, but we don't care. He lived with his mother, his stepfather, and his two brothers. Throughout his early childhood, he experienced a lot of hardships, and his living situation was not ideal. His house was reported to be unkept in more sociable words, and his front yard was said to have had a lot of junk and old cars in it, which made their neighbors stay clear of the LaPlante family. Little is known about his childhood, but it is widely reported that Daniel was abused by his father emotionally, physically, and even sexually.
Oh no.
So with all that going on in the home, it is no surprise that Daniel experienced hardships at school as well. He struggled to read at the same level as the other students because, at an early age, he was diagnosed with dyslexia. Not only did he struggle academically, but he also struggled socially. He didn't have any strong social bonds that kids usually find when they go to school. He only had a few friends, and a few classmates described him as being creepy and weird. Which is sad if you don't know what he does later. Just to call someone creepy.
It is
creepy and sad.
Yeah, it is sad. Like we say, or you know, it's okay to feel bad for the child, you know. And also, I'll say, like, it's not necessarily a bad thing to be called creepy or weird, you know.
Well, especially when like no one's trying to be your friend and they're just like looking on the yeah. outside. They're just like, oh, that I don't want to be his friend because he seems creepy and weird.
Yeah, they're just assuming things about him.
Yeah. But now, if you go to his, like, house and, like, you have a conversation with him, and all he talks about is, like, wanting to, like, put dolls on, like, on walls and, like, speak to the dolls and, you know, name the doll Harold.
That's a little weird.
That's when it becomes a little weird. That's when it becomes a little weird.
It's a little weird.
And I'm going to see myself out if we talk about, if you're talking about a doll named Harold.
Right.
Anyway, after noticing his lack of cleanliness and lack of motivation, his teachers referred him to a psychiatrist. He visited the psychiatrist, and while under the care of the psychiatrist, he was diagnosed with hyperactivity disorder. And I'm not sure if that's ADHD or if that's a completely different disorder, but he was diagnosed with hyperactivity disorder. Things took a dark turn when his psychiatrist began to make sexual advances towards him.
Oh my God.
For the duration of his time with his psychiatrist, he was sexually and mentally abused. And we now have two examples of two strong and powerful men taking advantage of Daniel at a very, very early age. So this...
Wow, that's so sad.
I feel like this is... it can do something to a person, you know?
Definitely.
Around 1985, at the age of 15, right after he turned 15, Daniel began a life of thievery in his neighborhood. He would begin to break into houses to steal anything, obviously, but on some occasions, he didn't take anything. He would just move things from their original place, or he would leave items behind solely for the purpose of installing fear and confusion in people that lived in the houses that he broke into. If you come into my house and you break into my house and you don't take anything, but you just move something.
Absolutely not.
You can keep the fucking house. It's not that big of a deal. You can keep the house.
Seriously.
My mental health and my well-being is not that important. I mean, my house is more... My mental health and my well-being is more important than the house. I'm just going to say that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if you know me, you know that everything in my house has a place. And if something is not in its place and I know I didn't move it, calling the psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
But not Daniel's psychiatrist.
Not Daniel's psychiatrist.
In 1986, at the age of 16, he obtained the number of a local family, which consisted of two daughters and their father. Now, looking through a lot of sources, a lot of the sources had different names for the daughters and the father. The name that seemed to come up most was the name Tina for the oldest daughter, and the name Karen for the youngest daughter, and the name Frank for the father. But in different sources, I seen like names like Annie and stuff like that. So,
okay,
I'll probably label them as like the oldest daughter, the youngest daughter, and the father.
Yeah, that sounds good.
The family was still in the process of grieving after losing their wife and their mother to cancer the previous year. No one really knows how he was able to obtain this information, but it is widely speculated that he had burglarized the house before, and that's how he was able to obtain this family's number. Daniel was able to convince the girls that he had gotten the house number from a mutual friend that went to the older daughter's school. He told the girls that he was a star athlete, captain of the football team, blonde and good looking. I mean, you don't have to be blonde to be good looking. I'm sorry, Justin. That wasn't a, right. That was not a direct. shot.
Well, right, but he's just like lying to lie.
Yeah, I mean, like, he had brown hair, and you could have brown hair and be attractive. Like, I don't feel like that was something he had to lie about.
Definitely. Unless he, like you said, maybe he already knew things about them, and so he was, like, targeting them in that way. He thought that they would be more friendly towards a blonde person.
I don't know. Maybe he's a Nazi. After several maybe. Phone conversations together, the oldest daughter and Daniel decided to go out on a date. When Daniel arrived at her front doorstep to take her out on a date, she was surprised and disappointed. She realized that the guy that she had been talking to had lied about his appearance and that he was not as personable as he had been on the phone.
Uh-oh.
Reluctantly, she went out on the date with him to the local county fair. Daniel discovered that the older daughter's mother had passed away during this time, leaving just her, her sister, and her father. After finding out this information, he began to take interest in the death of the older daughter's mother more than the date itself. This threw her off, and she was eventually able to get back home safely, but wasn't able to shake off the oddity of the night's event with Daniel. Another thing that shocked me is that it said that Daniel wasn't as personable as he was on the phone in person. And it made me think that the same thing is happening today with, like, I feel like catfishing.
Yeah.
This was catfishing before catfishing was catfishing.
For sure. For sure. I mean, I hope that it's not just like a anxiety thing.
Yeah. You
know? Like, it was easier for him to talk to her on the phone than it was to be. And I mean, just to play devil's advocate, maybe that's why he lied about the way that he looked, because he really wanted to impress her.
Yeah. But like, especially if you plan to actually meet her.
True. True.
Anyway. I'll get off my soapbox. One evening after this date, the older sister and the younger sister decided that they wanted to try to come in contact with their mother. So they decided to try to use a Ouija board to have a seance in their Ooh. Basement. Which I'm like, the kahunas. Okay. The kahunas.
Quite a jump, yeah.
Like, because I understand, like, you wanting to get in contact with your mother. And that's a very tragic way to lose a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Babies, don't do a seance with a Ouija board in your basement.
Mm.
You can literally take out one of those three things, and I still feel like it'll be all right. A seance in the basement, minus the Ouija board. Okay. A Ouija board in the basement without the seance. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A Ouija board and a seance without the basement. Okay. But a Ouija board, a seance, and a basement? Y'all were looking for trouble.
That's some trouble.
Y'all were looking exactly. for trouble. Yeah. No, they were looking for their mother, but they got trouble. During the seance, they did not get any answers from their mother. But later that night, as they slept, the girls heard knocking on their wall. To them, this was their mother, whom they tried to contact a few hours ago. As the girls lie awake, they begin to ask the spirit questions, and as a reply, the spirit would knock on the wall in a rhythmic pattern. This continued for a few nights, and eventually, the knocking, from whom they assumed was their deceased mother, would just keep them up at night. Along with the continuous knocking, the TV would change channels by itself, furniture would move, milk and alcohol would be consumed, and no one would know why. Their father just assumed that it was the girls playing tricks on each other, But the girls knew it wasn't them and assumed it was not their mother's spirit, but they assumed it was a demon's spirit.
Oh, no.
In late 1986, the sisters came home, and the oldest sister was terrified to see that there was a message written on her walls in what looked like blood that said, quote, "I am back. Find me if you can," end quote.
Oh, no.
First of all,
that's so awful.
Where did you go? Second of all, why are you back?
Right.
Anyway, after that, the girls hauled the behinds to a neighbor's house and called their father to tell them what happened. When their father came home, there was an additional message on the wall. I'm thinking this message was in the older sister's room. I don't think I said that, but I'm assuming that it was in the wall in her room. When the father came home, there was an additional message on the wall that said, "Marry me." At this point, their father knew that something wasn't right. He began the search of the home, and what he found was breathtaking and astonishing. In a wardrobe in one of the rooms, he found Daniel sitting on the floor.
Oh my God, no.
Some sources say that he was dressed in the dead mother's clothing, but I don't think that's true. I couldn't find it in like any police report that he was dressed up in like the deceased mother's clothing. And I also found that he had a hatchet. I think the hatchet part is more true after looking at some of like the court transcripts and things like that. I think the hatchet part, I'm pretty sure the hatchet part is true.
How absolutely awful.
Absolutely.
Like, oh my gosh. Ugh.
So as he's carrying this hatchet, he was able to get all of them into one room. And the older sister, Tina, was able to escape and go to a neighbor's house and call the police. And Daniel was arrested. So after he was arrested for his crimes against the Bowen family, he was sent to a juvenile detention center. But soon, he was released afterwards. While awaiting his trial, Daniel moved back home with his parents and continued his daytime burglary spree. That's a hard word to say.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. Do you know how old he is?
At this point, he's 16. So this was a little while after.
Oh, my goodness.
He's 16 or 17. So he was even... So this was after the date. Not exactly sure when, because I didn't want to write down false information. I've seen a lot of different things in a lot of different sources, but a lot of the sources that this event happened after the date that he had with the older sister.
Uh-huh. Okay. Wow.
So, on October 14th, 1987, he stole two 22 caliber firearms from a neighbor. On November 16th, 1987, Daniel burglarized the home of the Gustafson family, which included a pregnant nursery school teacher named Priscilla Gustafson, her husband, Andrew, and their two children, 5-year-old William and 7-year-old Abigail. On December 1st, 1987, while he was in the process of burglarizing the Gustafson family home again, Priscilla returned home. Daniel considered jumping out of the window and escaping. Instead, he confronted Priscilla with a gun and led her and her son William to the bedroom. He had put William in the closet, and he tied Priscilla to the bed using a makeshift ligature, and he gagged her with one of his socks from his feet. Ooh. I know, right?
Gross.
So trigger warning. He then proceeded to take advantage of Priscilla. And oh, no. Daniel covered her head with a pillow and shot her twice in the head. He then took William into the upstairs bathroom and drowned him.
Oh, no.
As he was leaving the house, he encountered Abigail, who had just gotten off the school bus and returned home.
Oh.
He lured Abigail into the downstairs bathroom, where she met the same fate as William.
Oh my God. Oh, that's awful.
Meanwhile, Andrew had been trying to get in contact with his wife on his phone all afternoon. He knew something was up because I think they had plans later that night. So he decided to return home. And when he returned home, the house was quiet with no lights on. And Andrew feared that something was wrong. He first found his dead wife laying face down on the bed. When he fled the house, he called the police. He later reported that he refused to look for his children because, quote, "I was too afraid I would find them dead," end quote. At this point, law enforcement quickly gathered up a list of possible suspects in the area. Not surprisingly, Daniel LaPlante was on that list. They went to talk to him, and he said that he had not done it, and his alibi was that he was at his 6-year-old niece's birthday party. He had, in fact, attended his niece's birthday party, but he went to his niece's birthday party immediately after he killed the Gustafson family.
Ew.
According to court documents, LaPlante was easily implicated using forensic evidence. Police found the shirt and the gloves he wore to drown the children in the woods behind the Gustafson home. The items were still wet. Yeah. When authorities went back to get Daniel, he was nowhere to be found. Luckily, he is dumb. He's dumb as a litter box. And he was found the next day on December 3rd in a dumpster where he belongs.
Where he belongs. Wow.
Full circle. Daniel went on trial for the Gustafson family murders in October 1988, and a jury found him guilty of murder. He received 3 life sentences without the possibility of parole.
Goodbye, Daniel.
So I quickly want to talk about the escalation here.
Yes.
The very, very quick escalation, because his escalation from burglary to murder confused a lot of people and a lot of police officials. And no one can really explain how or why he accelerated so fast. Like, just out of the blue. He didn't have,
that's pretty crazy.
They couldn't find it, like, a history of him, like, harming animals or, like, things that would lead people to think that he could possibly be a murderer. Anyway.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
It was the first thing I thought about when I got to this part of research. It was like, how did this get like this?
I was going to say that it sounds to me, of course, I don't know, and I don't know the situation. It sounds crazy, but a lot of times things like this are just crimes of opportunity, you know? Like, it might not have been, of course he was a disturbed individual, but not all murderers you know, have these thoughts as like young children, sometimes it just happens and then they crack and explode. But.
2.5 years after the murders, Andrew remarried. He, along with his new wife, both wear 2 wedding rings. He wears his wedding ring from his marriage to Priscilla, and she wears her wedding ring from her first marriage as well, because her first husband died of cancer 15 years prior to them being married. Both wear 2 wedding rings as an homage to their previous loves. And I also read that his second wife, her father-in-law walked her down the aisle. So the father of her deceased husband walked her down the aisle to get married to Andrew.
Oh,
I know.
It's too much.
In 2017, it seemed that Daniel may have finally come to terms with his actions. While appealing for a reduced sentence, LaPlante made the following statement. Quote, "I do not have the words to fully express my profound sorrow, but I am truly sorry for the harm I have caused. From the very essence of who I am, from the depth of my soul, I am sorry. I think this is all cow manure, because..."
Yeah, nobody cares, David. Like, seriously.
Daniel.
It's whatever.
Whatever. Because he had tried to get parole or like get a reduced sentence many times before, and all of those times except for his most recent one, no one really felt like he was genuinely sorry about his actions. He didn't seem very remorseful. So I guess this last attempt in 2017 was just trying to, I don't know, pull like the cover over someone's head. It didn't work, thankfully.
Thankfully.
So sadly, Andrew Gustafson passed away in 2014. However, upon his deathbed, Gustafson allegedly said, quote, "Don't ever let him out. He should rot in prison," end quote. And that is the short and disturbing story of Daniel LaPlante.
Wow. How tragic.
I feel like it would have been longer if I was able to find a really credible source. But a lot of the sources, a lot of the credible things I received were from court transcripts. And I just kind of went with, like, the things that was said throughout all of them. Like, the whole being found in the wife's clothing thing. It wasn't found everywhere. And even, like, in some sources even said that it wasn't a true statement. So I didn't know if I should include that. But I did include that. And what we now can do is have you guess the top song on December 1st, 1987, the day that he sadly murdered a family.
Was it September by Earth, Wind, and Fire?
Do you remember the 21st night of September? It's actually by an artist I have never heard before. So that means that person is...
white.
All right. You got 3 guesses. I'll give you a couple hints. I'll give you unlimited hints.
I get unlimited hints. Is it a boy or a girl?
Neither. It's a woman.
It's a woman. Okay. Is it Cher?
Do you want that to be one of your...
Well, no, I'm sorry. You said you don't know this person, so I'm gonna risk to take that back because you know Cher.
I know Cher. Cher knows me, actually.
Oh gosh. It's a woman that you don't know. I don't think I know any women that you don't know. It's like,
I'll sing a little bit of the melody.
I know. Shoot, I don't know the name. Oh, who's it by?
If I tell you, I'm taking away one of your guesses. So I'm going to tell you.
Oh, man.
The person's name is Belinda Carlisle.
Belinda Carlisle.
So you have now two guesses.
All right, Belinda. I know the song. I just can't think of the name. The words are not coming to me. Is it like heaven? No. Yes. Heaven is a place called... Heaven is a place on earth.
That is correct, Justin.
Yes! Yes!
The song is... The top song of December 1st, 1987 was Heaven is a Place on Earth by Belinda Carlisle.
Oh, wow.
I've heard the song plenty of times, too, but it's obviously her only song.
Yeah, I don't remember ever hearing that name very often, but how interesting. That was a fun fact.
It was a fun fact. But that's all I have for you today, Justin.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. That was a lot more disturbing than I expected it to be. Yeah, I'm thoroughly creeped out.
I can't wait to cover another case that's going to be disturbing. Even more disturbing.
Yeah. Uh-oh.
But if you have a disturbing story, please email us at paranormalcreativitypodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. You should email us your stories. We want to hear them. And you can also DM us at Paranormal Creativity Podcast on Instagram.
Yeah. If you have any, like, cases you want us to cover, we'll cover them. Maybe.
We will. Just maybe.
Depends.
Maybe if you go through our Patreon, then you might be more likely to get your case covered. Just saying. Well.
Don't do crack. It's not worth
and
it.
And come back next time.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Hit it, Justin.
Absolutely.